Thank you, Ileana. Hi, everybody. It's good to see some familiar faces and also some new ones. We will start with some meditation, and then I'll offer a little bit of a talk. And so I imagine some of you might be in transit or not in a place where you can close your eyes. But if you are in a place where you can close or lower your eyes, this is a moment. And to really allow yourself to be as comfortable as possible. If you get into your meditation seat and notice there's something you could do to really help your body arrive a little more softly, please feel free to just give yourself a stretch, or if that means getting up and getting an extra pillow or taking off a layer. I realize some of you have probably been practicing this kind of still meditation for a really long time, and some of you may be newer to the practice. We'll just all take the attitude that we can't do this wrong. And that this is not a self-improvement project. There's nothing wrong with us. We're just cultivating the conditions so that our natural loveliness can surface, and so that our bodies and hearts and minds can move as they naturally will towards well-being. And so we do that first of all by relaxing. Relaxing anything that is possible to relax. Softening the muscles and the bones of the body, softening the face, letting the belly relax and get full. Letting your weight fully drop into whatever's supporting you. We can also remind ourselves of the incredible support we have in this moment, the support of the earth itself and the land that we're on, honoring the ancestors of this land. The support of these lineages of awakening that we're practicing in, and just paying our respects to our Asian Buddhist ancestors and also our own spiritual and relational ancestors who are cheering us on. And then see if you can start to gather your awareness around a place in your body that feels good, that feels steady. Aligning your awareness with a place you can feel your breath coming and going. Or if that doesn't feel good, another place in your body where you can feel we're gathering the awareness and we're resting it in one place at one time. Giving the mind and the heart and the body an opportunity to synchronize by gathering our attention in this way. And from time to time, just gathering the attention with soft hands and resting in the place we've chosen to pay attention. And of course, it's easiest to pay attention to what we love. So if there's any warmth or care that you can tap into for this body that is still here, is always doing its best. This body that has been so loyal to us, and so expressing our loyalty to it by paying attention just in this moment-to-moment way. So we're about halfway through the practice now. Give me a good time to refresh your awareness of your connection to the earth. The support of your spiritual and ancestral lineages. Your loyalty to feeling. To relax anything that can be relaxed. Aligning your awareness with that place in your body and just gently gathering your attention, steadying, resting. And as we start to move into these last few moments of practice, just offering some appreciation for yourself for spending this time in this way and for everything that supported you to be here. And in a moment, I'll ring the bell to close the practice. As we transition, excuse me, feel free to take a moment to just stretch or look around your space, adjust your body so that it's comfortable to listen for a bit. You may sit, you may stand, you may lie down. Feel free to move. Really, such an honor to be here. And I was thinking as I was preparing just how long this gathering has been taking place on Monday nights. And yeah, me myself, it's been a little while. I actually, the last time I taught here was on Zoom, and it was early pandemic. I think I was very pregnant at the time. And it's been a few years. And so it's just nice to be here. And nice to feel like a part of something that's been going on for quite some time. We're all a part of it now. So I wanted to begin tonight by reminding you of a story from the Buddha's life before he was the Buddha, which means the one who's awake, right? Before his enlightenment, he was a prince. His name was Siddhartha Gautama, and he was said to have lived this very cushy life. Like his father gave him every luxury and really shielded him from any suffering or discomfort of any kind. And in the story, it said that there was something inside him that was just kind of like not satisfied with the idea that life was one pleasant experience stacked on top of another, stacked on top of another, which is how his life had been constructed. And so when he was 29, he got curious and he ventured outside the palace. And when he left the palace, he encountered all the things that his family had been shielding him from. And in particular, four beings who are called the four heavenly messengers in this story, the Devadutta. And the first one was an old person from whom Siddhartha learned that, oh, people get old. This is part of what happens in this realm, right? And then another person who was sick, from whom Siddhartha learned that human beings have bodies that are of the nature to become ill from time to time. the third person that he encountered was a corpse, actually, and he learned that all beings die. That's part of what happened in this realm. And then the fourth person that he encountered, this fourth heavenly messenger, was an ascetic, a wandering yogi who inspired him to embark on the path of awakening, first through asceticism, and then, you know, kind of venturing beyond that, eventually to complete enlightenment. So I imagine many of you have heard this story before, and you know, the teaching that, you know, in a way, it was his encounter with these heavenly messengers that sparked his desire, the sense of urgency, that shook him out of his cozy place, you know, of his habitual patterns around ignoring the facts of life. And finding that what used to be acceptable for him in his life had become unacceptable. And seeking after truth and freedom. And so in these past couple of pandemic years, I've been thinking a lot about this teaching of the heavenly messengers, and especially about illness as a messenger. And that's part of what I'd like to explore here tonight. You know, first, how exactly is illness, quote unquote, heavenly as a messenger? Certainly doesn't feel that way. And if it's a messenger, what's the message? And really, how might illness be a doorway into liberation, if that's the door that's opening for us at the moment? The Buddha said there were 84,000 Dharma doors, right? And so I don't wish for any of us to take the door of being sick, but for some of us, that's going to be our path, you know? And we don't always get to choose, but we do get to, it seems, mine whatever experience that life is offering us for all the wisdom that's available there. And it does seem that these lives, with their exquisite and baffling combo of joy and suffering, contain all that we need to become free. I've also been thinking a lot about this teaching on the Deva Dutta, the heavenly messengers, because over the last several months, I myself got really, really sick after getting COVID back in September. And it feels a little bit weird sharing that, because while I'm much, much better, it's not exactly over. But then I figured that since being sick has been pretty much the biggest thing in my life over the past 6 months, it'd be a little weird to show up here and not talk about it, right? And especially because probably some of you are also sick, or someone close to you is, and either you're talking about it or you're not talking about it. And what the Buddha said is that all of us are going to get sick. That there are very few people who leave this earth without going through a major illness of some kind. And so my hope is that sharing my experience will be a jumping off point for you to reflect on your own experience and what you're learning about your body and nature. And what we are, other than, you know, being productive again. So I'll share what happened to me. I just moved into a new apartment with my 2-year-old, and she and I were getting used to a new home and a new school, and then I got COVID, and there was just so much going on that I didn't feel like I could take time off. And I thought I'd recovered, but then I was so tired and I kept getting sick. And I brushed it off as like daycare viruses my kid must be bringing home, and just the fatigue of being a solo parent suddenly. And then somewhere around mid-January, I realized that even though I said, you know, to people I was working with, my friends, like, oh, it must be another daycare virus, that actually my child hadn't been sick for several months and I was still sick. And then the turning point moment was sometime in late February, where I was working from bed as I had begun to do. And one day I was working there and I realized that I was hungry and I had to use the bathroom. But I looked at the clock and there were about 2 hours till I had to go pick up my kid from school. And I had the thought, oh, I should wait to go to the bathroom and get food until I have to get up for pickup so I can conserve energy. And then I noticed that thought and I thought, oh my God, I'm not well. And clearly by that point I had been not well for some time and just not noticed it, which is humbling to admit as a meditation teacher who spends a lot of time cultivating present moment awareness. I think it's also a testament to the power of identity that I really thought of myself as a healthy person, and my mind just couldn't wrap itself around the reality that my health had gone. I think it's also a testament to how scary it can be to admit illness in a country where most of us are one medical emergency away from financial ruin, and in a culture that measures our worth by how much we can work and how much we can produce. And so, one thing that was funny is that right before I got really sick, I was teaching a class and I read a passage in it from a writer and activist I really admire, Leah Lakshmi Piepsna Samara Sinha. She wrote a book called Care Work, Dreaming Disability Justice. And I read this passage kind of like, not as something I at the moment personally related to, but something that I was learning from. And then fairly soon after, it was something that really reflected my experience. So I want to read it to you now. She wrote, "How do we claim this body, broken, beautiful, not as a liability, but as a gift? How do we say that my hurting body in bed sucks? And it is also a beautiful ability to write for hours. And part of this beauty is access to dream time, time for stories to grow, time that is not logical, rational, clock time, punch the clock time. At 35, I am surrounded by people who say, how do you have time to write those poems and stories, co-create those projects? How are you so productive? I am so productive because when my gut tells me to take a day off, I do. I lie. I say I have a family emergency. And then I follow the words out of my belly. I give into the bed, to the long, long sleeps, and time's curled up, and the words curl close to me because of them. How do I say that being chronically ill is a gift, that maybe I would not have become a writer if I had not been too sick and tired to work?" And so, yeah, none of us wish to be ill. And when I was in my lying down days, I really circle around this question, you know, what's the message? What's the gift here? for me, part of it was that this body belongs to itself, belongs to nature, and I am clearly not in charge. And I can do my best to take care of this body, and I did. I did everything that every doctor and healer told me to do, and I am starting to recover. And I'm lucky because not everyone recovers. And in the heart of my illness, when I could not will my body to have the energy or to become well again, I realized that I felt a little sense of betrayal. Like, how dare you not obey me? This is not our contract. And then over time, I noticed that the fatigue, the deep, deep fatigue, was my body trying to tell me what it needed to be well. That my body was just doing its best to be well. And that struck me as such an innocent wish. Oh, this body just wants to be well. It's like the essence of bodhicitta, right? How fundamentally good it is to want to be well and to not suffer. And so in seeing the kind of sweetness and the tenderness of that, I did start to befriend my body in a different way. Not that I like loved everything that it was doing, but that I could be at peace with it even when it wasn't doing what I wanted. And I found that when I could regard what it was doing as good, I could stop struggling with it and kind of let the days wash over me. And it helps to remember that everybody is like this, right? That everybody gets sick. There's a teacher who I love, an elder in this tradition, Anna Douglas, some of you may know. She teaches often about aging and dying. One time, it was, I think it was apprenticing or maybe early teaching on the women's retreat that she pioneered at Spirit Rock. And she opened up a Dharma talk by saying this. She said, bodies don't tend to be very comfortable. Have you noticed? And we just cracked up, like just roars of laughter. You can imagine after sitting on retreat and like with knees screaming for days at a time, you know, someone saying like, have you noticed your body isn't very comfortable? And it said in the text, you know, even the Buddha had back pain, that he had to lie down sometimes, couldn't give a talk, had to ask his cousin to do it. And there's something that is really important that can be known from lying down, from pausing in a world that just seems to be hurtling forward at ever-increasing speeds, right? There's something that we can know about what it means to be human and not machine. Something about what remains when the doing starts to fall away. So it does take some like inner inner work, inner fortitude, I want to say, and make friends with this situation of like illness being somewhat inevitable. And also the fact that some of us get better and some of us don't. In either case, we get to learn patience. In the Buddha's teachings, patience is one of the 10 paramis, one of the 10 virtues that we can express in daily life. And the word in Pali is kanti. It's often translated as patience or forbearance. And there's levels of this patience. You know, there's a kind of patience that we have, the kind that I learned as a kid, where it's like, you know, holding on like hell till we get what we want. Like you're in the back of the car and you want a popsicle and, you know, mom's like, Wait till we get home and you're like, ah, you know, the white knuckling it patience. But Kanti also means the patience that we have if we never get what we want. And it is also the patience of having once had something that we no longer have and will never have again. And the Buddha said that's kind of how it is in this realm. You know, things seem unbearable and we bear them and we are enlarged and somehow freed by the process. There's this poet named Maggie Smith who during the pandemic, early pandemic days, was also getting divorced and started to write like mini pep talks to herself on Twitter that ended up kind of turning into a book called Keep Moving. And in one of the short passages in the book, she writes this. She says, "When life held your hand in the flames, it taught you something about the kind of burning you can endure. You survived. Don't forget that and don't diminish it. Keep moving." You survived. Don't forget. Don't diminish. It's one of the things we can learn through illness. And because, you know, illness can persist longer than we can manage to struggle with it, illness can actually be a doorway into the second noble truth, you know. But the real clear seeing that some of our suffering comes from clinging to wanting things to and demanding things to be different than they actually are. And that when we're through reason or wisdom or exhaustion, no longer able to struggle, you know, there is a kind of peace and equanimity that sets in. This moment of stopping trying to figure it out and transitioning into allowing, to being in alignment with what's actually happening in our bodies and to tend to it with love. So yes, bodies are inherently good and the health of our bodies are not in our control entirely. And there can be some shame around that, but it's not our fault. As the Buddha said, things are subject to change. So I know for some of us it's evening time and you may be on your way to bed. Was kind of inspired to read a new classic on impermanence that I read to my daughter before bed sometimes. It's Pete the Cat and His Four Groovy Buttons. Some of you may be familiar. If you know anyone under the age of 8, Pete the Cat, they go wild for him. Okay. So I'll just read a little bit from here. It's quickly turning into a Dharma pajama party. Pete the Cat put on his favorite shirt with four big, colorful, round, groovy buttons. He loved his buttons so much, he sang this song. My buttons, my buttons, my four groovy buttons, my buttons, my buttons, my four groovy buttons. Oh no. One of the buttons popped off and rolled away. How many buttons are left? 3. Did Pete cry? Oh goodness, no. Buttons come and buttons go. He kept on singing his song. So Pete sings the song with, you know, 3 buttons. As you can imagine, 1 button pops off, then he has 2 buttons. Button pops off, then he has just 1 button. The button pops off. And rolls away. And it says, how many buttons are left? 0. Did Pete cry? Oh goodness, no. Buttons come and buttons go. Pete looked down at his buttonless shirt, and what do you think he saw? His belly button. And he kept on singing his song. my button, still have my belly button. My button, still have my belly button. I guess it simply goes to show that stuff will come and stuff will go. But do we cry? Oh goodness, no. We keep on singing. Where's Pete? I do tell my daughter it's okay to cry. But you know, health comes and health goes. And for almost all of us in the end, it goes. And so each time we get sick, even if it's a small sick, we can be present for that sick. We can care for that sick. And it can prepare us for the big sick that it come. And I hope that it never comes. But if it does, we get to learn about softness and stillness and all that we are worth along the way. I was remembering back to the early pandemic days and an essay that many of you may remember by Arundhati Roy called The Pandemic as a Portal. She wrote it on April 3rd, 2020. So just mere weeks after, I think this was still when they were telling us that we would like be okay by the summer. You remember that? That was great. But I wanted to read it again because it seems so because it was a prophetic piece and it feels like an important piece from a time where life was so disrupted and we had no idea, no choice but to let it disrupt us in a way that seemed to open up possibilities for new ways of being, not just for us individually and how we're sick, but also how we think about illness and productivity and profit in a more collective way. So this is what she wrote back in April 2020. She said, whatever it is, coronavirus has made the mighty kneel and brought the world to a halt like nothing else could. Our minds are still racing back and forth, longing for a return to normality, trying to stitch our future to our past, and refusing to acknowledge the rupture. But the rupture exists. And in the midst of this terrible despair, it offers us a chance to rethink the doomsday machine we have built for ourselves. Nothing could be worse than a return to normality. Historically, pandemics have forced humans to break with the past and imagine their world anew. This one is no different. It is a portal, a gateway between one world and the next, We can choose to walk through it, dragging the carcasses of our prejudice and hatred, our avarice, our databanks and dead ideas, our dead rivers and smoky skies behind us. Or we can walk through lightly with little luggage, ready to imagine another world and ready to fight for it. So the portal is still open. And the messages are still coming. Maybe I'll keep listening to our bodies, to each other. And to the new world that is wanting to emerge from all this. You know, I talked a lot about illness tonight, but I find myself wishing each of you well. And because I'm still on the mend, I asked Spirit Rock and they said it was okay if I end a little early tonight. So maybe we can all go lie down. But thank you so much for your kind attention. Thanks for letting me show up as I am. I'm glad we could spend this time together. So before I hand it back over, just an opportunity to dedicate the merit of our practice tonight. And all that sitting, all that listening, all the feels. And it said, of course, that when we come together like this, whether in person or virtually, and we dedicate our minds and hearts to waking up to the truth of who we really are, that creates like this big field of merit, right? It's almost like we each become acupuncture points in the earth wherever we are. And that if we, in these transition moments, send an intention to not just keep that merit for ourselves, but share it out, it actually blesses everyone around us. I'll just ask you if you are able to kind of drop into your acupuncture point, your spot on the earth, and send out peace and ease and whatever healing is possible to all the beings around you as far as your awareness can stretch. I imagine that some of us are close enough that our fields of awareness even touch. And if it resonates with you, connecting with the wish that in whatever way possible, our practice tonight primes us to show up for liberation whenever we can, our own and each other's, and the wish that all beings everywhere be happy and be free.